And good morning. It is a special morning. We have our WRJN historical marker number 13. This is where we look back at the history of WRJN and the people that made the history over the last 98 years. And this morning, we're going to be talking to a young man whose father announced his birth on this radio station. We're going to be talking about Lyman Marins. And here he is talking about the birth of our special guest, David Marins.
And yesterday morning at 8:46, even I didn't know it was 8:46. We got at the hospital at 8:35. A boy was born to Mr. and Mrs. Lyman Marins of 2901 Ashland Avenue. A little boy, 6 pounds, 7 ounces. Come on in, George, have a cigar. Bill, come on in, boys, have a cigar. Let's open this fresh new box of stogies, hmm? Come on in, boy, have a cigar.
Well, thank you.
On behalf of David Mark. George, come on in, George. All right, give one to George. George can't leave his controls. Shirley, come on in, here's a box of candy. To all the new parents from the Block Furniture Company, including me, we extend congratulations and best wishes. Join us again tomorrow morning every day, Monday through Saturday at 7:40, when the Block Furniture Company, 419 Main Street, again presents The Little Red Book.
And that is our guest being born. That is something. I can't remember the last time I heard, had a guest on the radio. We actually had his birth. Hey, David Marins is here. Talking to you from Tennessee this morning. And thanks for joining us. I do appreciate it, David.
Well, thanks for having me, and I didn't know you were going to do that.
Neither did I. That was a surprise from our other guest in here, Tom Carco, former news director of WRJN for years. And he's going to talk about, he knows more about your father. We got a picture of your father staring me right in the face right now. And where'd you find
it? Oh, wow.
Where'd you get that, Tom?
Well, I've had that. Well, actually, David, I believe, gave that to me. Thank you, David. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Tom. How about you?
Very good, very good. We should let everybody know that I worked here from 1979 to 2018 for 39 years, and I'm kind of the historian now of the station. I have a lot of stuff reference the history of this radio station, part of it thanks to David and other things that I've acquired, so that's why I'm in here talking about stuff that's happened in the past.
You get that emeritus title now.
Yeah. There's nothing else.
Emeritus. All right, so David, let's talk about your father. Was this the first station he worked at? Do you know?
No, it wasn't, actually. After he graduated from high school in Chicago, and before he entered radio, he worked as a bookkeeper at the Chicago Stockyards for Armoring Company back then to earn money so that he could go to business school and broadcasting school. He always had an interest in broadcasting, and I think back then his big desire was to be the sportscaster on WGN radio in Chicago. Of course, you got to have some experience to do that job, but he did apply there. And what's interesting about that is he actually started in radio at WHBY in Appleton, Wisconsin. And he was actually referred to WHBY by WGN. So I thought that was a kind of an interesting thing. And so that's where he started. He came to Racine in 1944 to work as a staff announcer at WRJN. And then he became the program director in 1946.
Why did he come to WRJN? There's a little bit of a story there.
Yeah, well, I guess when he started, he told me about it a long time ago. I still remember it. When he started at WHBY, they couldn't pay him a lot, and I think they promised him a raise maybe after he would be there for about a year. Well, the year came, and they couldn't afford to give him a raise, so they said they wouldn't blame him if he decided to look elsewhere, and they said they would give him a glowing recommendation and everything, which they did. And I guess he moved to Racine to get about another maybe $5 a week back then. I think he was making maybe $35 or $40 a week back then, he told me. And so, and he lived at the YMCA on the lake in Racine for a number of years.
That's gone.
That building is now gone, Dave.
Yeah, I noticed. Yeah, I was up there recently when I saw you, and yeah, I noticed that. it was come down. My dad always said the three sure things in life are death, taxes, and change.
Yeah.
Yep.
He comes to WRJN, which is located at the time on the third floor of the American Bank Building downtown, which is now the Racine Art Museum for everybody who's listening. And So eventually, of course, he transitions out to the current location of Victory Avenue, Radio Park.
So he
gets this job, and it's really not long after, basically a year later, he gets to do something very important on the air, and it has to do with the former president.
Yeah, Franklin Roosevelt passed away. He got to announce that to the city of Racine, but there's a funny story behind that. And I talked to a Journal Times reporter after my dad had passed away, and we had to talk kind of quick because he was facing a deadline, and I had to send a quick picture. I wished I could have sent the better picture, but everybody was in a rush to get the story in the paper before the deadline came. And basically, he said he was in the car, listening to the radio. And he heard the report come across on another station, so he tuned into WRJN, and he hadn't heard anything. So he drove over to the station. I forgot what show was on now, but anyway, he said the alarm bells were going off by the teletypes. I guess the Associated Press had reported it, and they had a bell, I guess, that would alert the station to a bulletin coming across. And I guess nobody heard it or paid attention to it because they were over in the studio area. And, he came in with the bulletin and announced it to Racine that, the president had passed away. And he said they probably wouldn't even know it today if he hadn't gone in there. He used to joke about that a little bit. So, but yeah, and when he walked in, though, he kind of was shouting, "Hey, how come nobody's reporting this? The president just died," So they didn't realize it, I guess, at the time. And I guess not too much time had gone by before he got to the station, but
yeah.
Well, you got to be real careful on those reports, especially today, because you never know who's scamming you on these reports.
By today's standards, yes. Back then, that when you get it from the Associated Press, that was word.
The only thing I ever saw come over on a flash, I took two flashes. Nixon resigns, Challenger explodes. Two flashes.
Oh, yeah. I happened to be driving into this station and heard about the Challenger explosion on another station, ironically. And guess what? At that point, we did not have it on the air. So I was like a block away from the station. And I got in and then told news director Don Edmark about it. And immediately we went to ABC News.
And those flashes generally come over like in two words. That's all they give you. Then they give you the bulletin. Then they give you the urgency after that. But yeah, nowadays, you got to triple check these things because you don't know who's scamming you.
Nowadays, yes.
Yeah.
So, David, August of 1945, your dad's at work downtown in the bank building. He's reading news, I believe, at the time. And all of a sudden, he starts getting teary-eyed. What's going on?
Oh, that one. That was when they had a tear gas system in that bank, I guess, to help thwart robberies. And they were maintaining the system that day. And apparently, they accidentally caused a tear gas release, and the broadcast control engineer, my dad, kept the station on the air while everybody evacuated the building.
Bernie Fox was the engineer. There's a picture of your dad. In the Journal Times, wiping his eyes. I believe we have it here. And it made the newspaper. It was that good. the tear gas system had been installed. This is 1945 this happened. It was installed after the Dillinger gang robbed that bank in 1933.
Right. Yeah, I remember him telling me about that, too. And, yeah, and if I'm not mistaken, I think that was on the front page of the Racine Journal Times at the, you know, when it was printed.
Yep.
Who tests tear gas?
I think it was more an accidental release.
I got to believe it. Who tests that? Let's see if it works. Release the tear gas.
Yeah.
But that's...
Somebody must have bumped the switch when they were working on it.
Yeah. That story made it all over the state of Wisconsin, probably outside over the wire services.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. If you look around, say, newspapers.com, you can find, like, UPI or AP stories about that.
No kidding. Yep. Wow, I didn't know that.
Well, yeah, it's a unique story. Very unique.
It sure is. Yeah.
Groundhog Day in 1949. Your dad talked to Brother Groundhog, as it was billed at that point, on shortwave. Do you know that story?
Mm-hmm. I heard a little bit about that, too. He also interviewed Santa Claus once.
Okay.
On radio. But, yeah, I've heard about that story, too, Groundhog.
They did all kinds of unique things to attract the listeners and get their interest in. And there was a caricature in the paper of your dad and the groundhog, an artist's rendition, because they couldn't get a photograph of it. So they had an artist's create it.
I think he kept a copy of that. I think I remember seeing that, and I probably still have it. I kept a lot of the things that he kept, because not only, you know, was it, yeah, I mean, it's historic, even to the, you know, to the town of Racine and to him and to the our family, you know, with his career there for so many years. So I held on to everything I could that he had. He always said, someday this stuff will be yours. Well, it became mine, and I've tried to preserve it all as much as I can.
They couldn't get a picture of a groundhog, because you've seen one, you've seen them all.
Well, but this was the groundhog.
Really? Oh, this was the official groundhog.
Yeah.
Okay.
And your dad was here from 1944 to 1970. The announcer, program director, he did a lot of stuff with this radio station.
He did. You know, in 1947, he and one of the salesmen at WRJN originated the telephone quiz show You Can't Lose. And started out as a 15-minute show once a week, and then it became a Monday through Friday show that ran from about, it's 12:35 to 1:15 in the afternoon, and it was broadcasted all into the 1970s. I don't know how long that show kept going after he left, but I know it was on for a while, and I know the station gave away thousands of dollars in prizes over the years on that show. And because of that show, and it was in his, you know, earlier days of broadcasting, you know, he developed an easy style of, you know, talking with people and managed to get the most out of each conversation. And he also used to do Man on the Street programs featuring adults and children, and interviewed many prominent personalities and most presidential hopefuls as well when they came to Racine.
Let's listen to a segment of You Can't Lose.
And we're ready to drop some gift certificates your way with our first call this afternoon going out to a number 4. With whom am I speaking? Mrs. Bending, good afternoon. This is Lyman Marins calling from You Can't Lose over WRJN. Oh, dear, you say, why? You didn't expect me today? Well, shucks, I didn't know that, Mrs. Bending. How come you weren't expecting me today? Is this the first time we've ever called you? First time. Well, then you had reason not to expect me today. Have you known the answers to some of our questions in the past? Yes, you have, but you probably won't know the one we have today. Well, you're not going to like yourself when I tell you that we have $62.50. Oh, no, she shouts in the telephone.
Couldn't they put phone calls on the air back then? Who knows if there's really someone at the other end?
Yeah, well, they really did it, and I guess eventually Stan Fisher or somebody came up with a way to make it two-way, you know, where you could hear the other end.
You were right. Well. Very easy conversational style, very, very casual, just talking to folks.
Yep.
Wow. So your dad, you talked about the man on the avenue. He did Uptown Racine, which outside the theater up there, which the theater building is still there. It doesn't. Uh-huh. It's not a theater anymore. But he would talk to people. Man on the Avenue in Uptown Racine, 1948. There's an ad promoting that. Just talking to shoppers in front of the theater, and you know, getting people on the air, and just he talked to everybody. It was amazing times. Okay,
How did they do the remote of doing that?
Well, they had shortwave back then.
Is that how they did it?
They did shortwave, or they did it by phone. They did phone. Mm-hmm. Stan Fisher, and I think it may have been after Lee Deccant had left the station, but Stan Fisher was the chief engineer. I mean, mm-hmm. they strung phone lines everywhere. Downtown, uptown, you name it, they put phone lines. They also eventually brought in shortwave, which was a remote transmitter, basically, and you brought it back to the radio station, and they broadcast from different locations. So it may have been that. It may have been the phone lines. Don't know specifically.
It's a lot of work. Now we just use a cell phone and boom,
yeah, well,
you're on.
Yeah, now.
Wow.
Stan was an electronics genius, and he inspired me, along with some of the other engineers there, the broadcast control engineers, and eventually I ended up with a career in electronics myself. And a lot of my inspiration for that came from the radio station days, even when I was a little kid. Want to throw that in.
Stan Fisher, Lee Deccant, they did a lot of creativity in terms of equipment for WRJN over the years. And a lot of the equipment that came to the Radio Park site on Victory Avenue, a lot of it had been created by those two and continued after Lee Deccant left and Stan Fisher was in charge. So who knows? The rack that's in the back of this studio might be the same rack that Stan Fisher brought in 1957 when they moved here.
When you do the man on the street interviews, don't you take a risk going live with these things?
And there, no delay system, right?
Yeah. So you take a risk. This person isn't going to say anything, you know, any profanity or even something controversial coming out of their mouth. You never know.
Different times, though.
Takes one nut.
I think there was a word called decency back then where most people, I mean, you pretty much rely that everything would go pretty smooth, but I suppose they were prepared in case it didn't.
Whoa. Yeah, you got to be careful.
There are a lot of photographs and ads in the newspaper over several years that your dad was here talking to different people. Also, for business promotion purposes, he would be in the pictures for the winners of Queen and King for a Day. You remember seeing those pictures?
Yeah, in fact, I think I've got one with me right here. I've got a few things here, but yeah, Queen for a Day, yeah.
Everything was to promote business back then. Mm-hmm. And they did a lot of promotions, a lot of contests, and your dad was involved in pretty much all of them because he's the program director. So he's kind of running the show from that end.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, he used to talk about some of those programs and he did save some of those newspaper ads and articles about the shows and. You know, these newspapers are starting to deteriorate, but they're still in pretty good shape considering how old they are.
We are speaking with David Merrins. His dad is Lyman Merrins, who is very historical in the growth and the history of WRJN. We call this our WRJN historical marker. This is number 13. It's Lyman Merrins. Now, Lyman is no longer with us, but his son David is. And with me is Tom Carco, who is our station historian, and he's very good at putting these history days together. Now, Lyman Merrins, I wasn't even radio when he ended his career here at WRJN in 1970. I was still in high school. And but we played earlier David Merrins' birth announcement on the air, which I thought was amazing to have your birth. I mean, who's got that?
your dad kept it.
Yeah, who has one of those? The earliest picture I have is me laying buck naked on a couch in the Bronx.
Okay.
That's it. That's all I have. And that's, I know you don't want that image, so let's get that out of my head. All right, so we've been talking about Lyman Marin's career, and just to backtrack in case you're just joining us, he started here at WRJ in 1944 and wound up his career in 1970, started as a staff announcer, wound up as program director.
And chief announcer.
A chief announcer.
Don't forget that.
I know, they have that title, chief announcer, back then. And it's one of those things where he made a lot of innovations of the station, put his mark on WRJN, and let's continue.
His voice was significant in the history of this radio station. So I got something, July 1959. There's a citizen letter to Tex Reynolds, the columnist for the Journal Times at that point. And that citizen letter is in support of your dad and a bunch of coworkers here at the station. They want to plant peach pits along a street, and they wanted to call it Peach Tree Lane. Did you hear about that?
Maybe a little bit. I might have a story on that. And I recognize the name Tex Reynolds.
Oh, yeah.
Is one of the journalists at the Times. Yeah.
Who also did some work on this radio station. He would opinions of the passerby back in the earlier days.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
Makes more sense to have that street in Atlanta than it does here.
Really?
just something they did on the air, I'm sure. Your dad did on the air, just to grab some attention, and maybe Tex Reynolds would get wind of it, and sure enough, it happened and got a little attention in the newspaper. Many different programs they tried to, I mean, they were helping people, they informing people. A 1968, a jobathon. Your dad, and does the name Bob James ring a bell?
Yes, it does. I remember Bob.
Tell me about Bob.
Well, he was one of the, I would say, one of the newer members of the station when I remembered him. I remember when he came on board, my dad helped hire him. And he had a music program, Rhythm at Random, I think it was, or something like that he used to broadcast in the afternoon. I think he went on the air about the time my dad would leave at 3:30 in the afternoon. He would come into the station, and basically he took my dad's place during the late afternoon and into the early evening. And so I didn't always see a lot of him because he'd show up later in the day before my dad would leave. And, of course, I was in school during the week most of the time, unless it was a holiday. Sometimes my dad would bring me to the station on the holidays. And so then I'd see other people that I didn't normally see.
Who are some of the other staff members that you remember? You talked about Bob James here for a second. And who are some of the others that you remember from those earlier days?
Oh, there was Gary Sewer, of course, and Tony Simchek. And I remember them real well. And Bob James, I just mentioned, I remembered. Norb Trottier. Yeah, I like Norb.
You couldn't help but like Norb.
I know. I remember him. He was at the station a long time, too, and he was there, I think, even, I don't know if he left at one time and came back. I something in the back of my mind says something like that. But I know he was there at the time my dad left in 1970 and was there for quite a while after that. My dad used to bring him mail from the AFTRA union that he used to get, and he'd bring it to Norb because my dad wasn't at the station any longer, but he would keep Norb informed in the station, informed those that were interested, you know, about some of the union information and activity.
Norb was here four different times over the course of his radio career. Always an interesting guy, always great stories. I got some of the best information and stories out of Norb. And I have an interview with him that I've recorded and gotten information from him. Also, the fact that you mentioned the union, this was a union shop for many, many years, up until a certain point in the 70s, I believe. And
when Century Insurance bought the station, and I think it was maybe part of the reason why my dad left when he did. I mean, my dad was working part-time in real estate from about 1955, even up until the time he left the station as a sideline. And you know, he loved people. He liked talking to people. He was a great real estate salesperson, very knowledgeable. You know, he got licensed and everything. He worked for L.L. Freeman back in 1955 for a while. And then eventually he ended up at, I remember in the 60s, he was at Plaza Realty across from Elmwood Plaza. Berger Hansen ran or owned Plaza Realty, was the broker. And that's where my dad met a future partner, where the two of them built homes in Racine. I mean, they started the homes over by Halter's Lake off Chicory and started homes up on Meacham Road, south of Taylor Avenue. He built about five or six homes there. And we eventually moved out near that area too, over on Sherry Lane in Pleasant Valley, which was Hanchy's property. And I know, Tom, you don't live too far from there. And
back then and now.
Yeah, man, you were our paper boy, I remember, on Sherry Lane, which helped me. You let me substitute for you, so eventually I ended up with a route myself. So you started my career, Tom.
We were eventually going to get to that. Yeah, so David and I had a connection that I delivered the newspapers to their house, and then he became my substitute, and then he eventually got the route. So,
did he steal the route, or did he get the route?
I always wondered if your dad might have, and my dad might have talked about it. I don't know. My dad knew your dad for a long time. I know your dad was the circulation manager at the Journal Times, and my dad used to talk about him. I mean, they know each other for quite a long time.
I remember the
Journal Times Labor Day picnics, you know, with the corn roast. Oh, that was my favorite thing. I ate more corn than anybody, I think.
When the JT owned the radio station, yes, they did things together in terms of those extracurricular activities. Yes, they were a family.
It was a family.
It was all
sure
part
was.
Of one thing, yes. Yep. You mentioned Elmwood Plaza. July 1958, your dad's there to broadcast the grand opening of the JCPenney store in Elmwood Plaza. There's a picture of him doing that.
Yeah, he told me he interviewed Penny at one point. And I don't know if it was at that grand opening or another time, but he actually interviewed JCPenney.
Wow.
Yeah.
1959, it got something. Your dad's did recorded interviews. Now, your dad did stuff outside of just the Racine area. Your dad was invited to do some things in Washington, in outside of the country. Interviews with Wisconsin's two U.S. senators and Racine's congressman at the time on the exchange visits by President Eisenhower and the Russian premier Nikita Khrushchev. He did interviews with those officials and then played it back on the air when he got back to Racine.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
I remember he interviewed a commander of an aircraft carrier, too. I've got the tape from that, by the way. I don't know if you found any of that in any of the archives, but I did find the tape. I hadn't played it, but it's labeled, you know, the aircraft interview. And I've got pictures from that aircraft interview. With he took my mom with at the time, and I think it was back in the late 50s or possibly early 60s. I don't remember the dates on that, but it's old, and I guess the whole interview's on that reel-to-reel tape.
The Music Maestro theme being played by Chuck Krimmel of the keyboard of the Mighty Wurlitzer, introducing today's Music Maestro show, music for your afternoon listening enjoyment. Organ Stallings by Chuck Krimmel and a musical favorite guest on the Music Maestro show.
It's our WRJ and Historical Marker series. We continue number 13, Lyman Marins, and his son is joining us today, David Marins. And Tom Carco is here as well, our former news director at WRJN. And let's talk about that, what we just heard.
David, you talk about it. You gave me that piece of audio. Thank you again.
Well, and I'll tell you, that's another one of the things at the radio station that really shaped my future life as an adult and a career. That was the Music Maestro show, and Chuck Grimmel was the owner of John Charles Music Company in Racine. And I guess I started learning to play a chord organ when I was about 3 years old, matching numbers and letters instead of reading the notes themselves. And eventually, I guess my dad had told Chuck about it, and Chuck thought, gee, you know, maybe you should buy an organ and let him take lessons. Well, my dad eventually did that, and I not only was interested in learning to play, but eventually I also got interested in promoting the sale of Wurlitzer organs and pianos, but mostly organs back then, and Chuck used to use me, I guess. I don't know how else to phrase it. I didn't know what they were doing at the time. I was pretty young, but even he brought me, you know, my dad brought me to the station. He thought maybe I'd want to, you know, play a couple songs on the radio back in 1965, first time I did that. And I guess I learned later, well, that was a good way to promote organs. You know, here's this kid playing, and hey, if a kid can do it, an adult can do it.
Were you
anyway,
learn
to play.
Were you on the air with your father a lot?
Not a lot, at times. And eventually, as I started to learn to play more and played better, he would bring me in on the holidays. You know, Chuck would be off, and, you know, and so that they could have some live organ music, I'd come in and play a few songs, you know, on the radio to fill in that live music time slot. And here's a little history, Tom, about the Music Maestro show. You know, the Chuck wasn't the first live organist at that station.
Oh, no.
There was a gentleman named Orson White who used to play on the Venetian Theater organ when the organ was still installed at the Venetian Theater. Back in the 40s and 50s, they'd have live organ music, you know, wired into the station downtown there to where they could broadcast live music from the Venetian Theater organ. And Orson, when he retired, before he retired, he was a Hammond dealer, sold Hammond organs out of Milwaukee, and had a partner, Irv Gerlot, who I think was also associated with the station back then. I mean, he may have performed there as well, the two of them, but Orson White was the main organist. In fact, the organ you heard at the beginning of the show on the Little Red Book, that was Orson White playing the Venetian Theater organ. They made a recording of that, and that theme was broadcasted every morning, even through the 60s, and as long as that program ran until they probably made a change to that. But that was Orson White on that theater organ.
So you were one of the staff organists at one point.
Yeah. Yeah. Orson, my dad told me to go down, and he moved to Sarasota. And when we used to vacation down in Florida almost every year, my dad always wanted to stop by and see him because they were really good friends. When my dad was working back in the 40s there, and I guess he and Orson and Orson's family, they used to hang out a lot together. And so they became really good friends. And so we used to visit him when we go to Sarasota. But when we moved to Florida back in 1973, and I got interested, you know, one of the largest Wurlitzer dealers in the United States was right where we were living. And boy, I was interested in that place. And my dad told me to go talk to Orson to see what kind of future I might have in the music business. And Orson actually encouraged me. So again, you know, the radio station was a big part of my life and my dad's time there and the people he knew. I mean, I mean, it was an influence for me as well. And but anyway,
hey, David, were you a big celebrity at school?
Because was I a big,
well, your dad's on the number one top.
Really. Yeah. I mean, people knew who my dad was, but you know, my dad always kind of downplayed the celebrity side of it, and he taught me. He says, you know, it's a job like any other job. And, you know, I even to this day, you know, when I see celebrities, I don't go too crazy, although there are certain people you'd go crazy for anyway. But I understand it's a living. People make a living doing different things. And he says this is just another way to make a living. And that's the way he always looked at it. And he says he, you know, and the station provides the service. And he was at the time, one of the faces of it, not the only one.
Yep.
And so that's the way I was kind of taught to look at that kind of thing.
We're going to play something now that your dad did by phone from Florida in December of 2006. We called him up, and he was on the radio station's 80th anniversary broadcast that we did from Memorial Hall.
We had live music. We had Orson White at the Venetian Theater organ. We had Elizabeth Grabo on a violin. We had Bessie Mittler playing a piano. We had live people. Do you have live people anymore?
Yeah, oh yeah, we still have a few live people around the radio station, yes. The radio station was always geared at the community service, getting
right
out and about, right?
Right. We used to have a man on the street broadcast right on the corner.
You ever have any interesting occurrences with a man on the street segment?
Right offhand, I can't think about it, except when General MacArthur came through town. We had an elaborate setup on Main Street waiting for the general to stop, and he blew town as fast as he came in. And boy, he came through with his sunglasses, and everybody said, "Who is that?"
Well, the three of us are alive, you know, so that's good.
Now, your dad was very gracious to do that, and we appreciated that very much. You were here. You came to visit the Radio Park Studios as they exist today, mm-hmm. not long ago, and I'm curious what your impressions of the place were or are compared to what you remember.
Well, at first I was happy to see it was still there and still going strong and about to celebrate 100 years in existence, which is incredible in itself. And my impression, like my dad always said, things change. Well, it's funny, though, when Don was showing me and my two grandsons were with me, we took a trip. I wanted to show them where I came from, and it was very nice of you, Tom, to when I talked to you about the 100th anniversary coming up a little bit. And you helped set that up for us. You called Don Rosen, and then he contacted me, and we made an appointment to take a tour, which was very nice. And I remember meeting Don a long time ago when my dad and I were up there. I think it was when one of my uncles passed away, and I drove him up to Racine, and that was the first time he'd set foot in that station since he left in 1970. You know, when that union mail would come to our mailbox and he'd bring it to the station and wanted to give it to Norm Trottier, he'd send me in to give it to him. For some reason, he just, I don't know, he loved the radio station and everything, but it was just, you know, at the time, he just felt it better that he'd stay out in the car, and he let me take it in. So I used to get to talk to Norb a little bit when I did that.
David, your dad was one of the most recognized voices in this station's history, and his body of work proved it. Thank you for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you, David. I do appreciate it. All the way from Tennessee. That's interesting. You couldn't do that back in Lyman Marin's days, could you?
I guess not.
Stan might have figured it out.
Yeah. Thank you, Tom Carco. I love having you in here. The station historian. Can't do these without you, by the way. There's no way I was going to pull this off. David, thank you very much for coming in. It's our WRJN historical marker number 13. And hopefully we'll have some more. You know, we got to get these in because not everybody's around all the time. Thank you, Tom. Thank you, David.